listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Wayne Fritz. Wayne, what's going on?
Hey, Bruce, what's happening? I got to tell you before we get started, yesterday was my grandson's graduation party.
Excellent.
And I had a T-shirt on then that was the same color as your shirt, and it had Texas A&M, and then it had Grandpa on it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, so, but I thought I'd wear this one today just kind of in honor of the ATN graduate on who's the host of this show.
All right. So, and then my son graduated last weekend before, and so that was it's good to have him graduated and moving on to the next chapter of his life. Let's tell you,
those 4 years went by fast, didn't they?
In one sense they did, and in another sense, I was glad to have it done. If you know what I mean.
Well, so, yes, I know. I can hear it loud and clear.
Get those.
I tell you, we've got a special guy on. He's been on before. But he's more than a successful businessman and a coach. He's my friend.
There you go.
And this is Dave Bryant. Dave is in Phoenix right now, or thereabouts. But he's coming to us live. And Dave has, I'm going to ask him some questions. So welcome, Dave.
Hey, thanks for having me.
But I want to get him started. Today, really, the subject matter is coaching people when they have lost their love, when they're down, when they're not, you know, doing 8 cylinders. They might be on 4 cylinders. And I think Dave's background says it all. He's been in sales. I'm going to let him fill it in, but he's been in sales his entire life. And he's got quite a background from where he came from, the companies he's been with, and the success factor he's had with each company. And with each company, with everything he's done, it's had to do with building his personal coaching experiences. And I think we ought to get him involved in one of those certification classes, because he's really, he's got that knack. But anyway, Dave, if you don't mind, if I could just hand it over to you a little bit and kind of start where you started.
Well, Wayne, you are a kind and gracious fellow, and I'm glad to call you a friend. You know, we broke one of the rules of American business. Once upon a time, I reported to Wayne, and, you know, bosses aren't supposed to make subordinates friends, and subordinates aren't supposed to be their bosses' friends. But it was inevitable that we threw that aside after a while, because Wayne's just too good a fellow to miss being a friend with. So, Wayne, your friendship means the world to me. And my whole reason for being on this show today is to try and help other people in their journey as coaches or as salespeople. So let's get started. As you know, I had an early entrepreneurial start in life. I grew up in a small town, broke, and age 10, some formative things happened to me. We had a very refined gentleman who was very well known, and his wife, who owned a very small traveling carnival. And at age 10, they asked me to go to work with them and do little play dates in their state fairs and their sports days and rodeos and stuff like that. So off I went as a 10-year-old to make money and work with the traveling carnival. So a lot of important lessons, because today's little presentation is about lessons, Wayne. And lesson number one, that gentleman told me, he said, when you work for me, every morning when you get up, the first thing I want you to have is a legal pad. And I want you to take a good hard pencil, and I want you to write to do on there. And I want you to make a list of everything you have to do, Mr. Bryant, and don't end your day without doing it. And if you do end your day without doing it, carry it over to the next day. Well, that's pretty good stuff for a 10-year-old to hear, Wayne. And guess what I write to this day? You can see my pad, to do. And it's carried out for all those years, which is a bunch. Wayne, you always tease me about telling them that story as a youngster, 14-year-old, I got a little job and got fired on it. And you wanted me to remind everybody. Yeah. Well, let me tell you what happened. I got a little job working for a farmer, and he was a good businessman. He was a Ukrainian gentleman, and he wanted me digging a ditch to lay an irrigation pipe. It was November, and that was good. And I started out, and he agreed to pay me $1.75 an hour, which back in the day was all a 14-year-old could ever hope for. Well, you know, my only challenge, Wayne, is I had asthma, and the cold weather in November just got my asthma going. And wouldn't you know it, this gentleman comes around the corner, and I'm leaning on the shovel. And I'm leaning on the shovel because I'm dying from an asthma attack. And he looks at me and he goes, "Brian, you're a welfare case. And I don't have no welfare cases working for me. You're fired."
Wow.
Well, Bruce, I was like, in about a split second, I was like, oh, man, I've just lost a job. And it is the only job in this small town. There is no other job. So I followed him into the office, and I begged him. I said, "Mr. Demchuk, look, I'm really a good employee, and I work hard. I just had to rest for a second because I'm having asthma." He says, "You're a welfare case. I saw you standing on that shovel. It was more than a second." And he was a hard-driven businessman. He had 100,000 chickens in this little town and 10 barns, and he wanted me to work. And I said, "I'll tell you what. I'll work for a dollar an hour. I got to have this job." Now, a dollar an hour was about a half a minimum wage, but for a 14-year-old, got to have it. And he said, "Well, I'll let you try one more time." Well, I worked there for 2 years and learned a lot of stuff, Wayne. And to this day, I could probably run a chicken farm. So it was well worth it. And it was just one of those life lessons. So, you know, I've got a list of stuff I can cover, Wayne, but I want you to ask the questions you want to hear answered.
Well, first of all, Dave, when you went back to the carnival, and how old were you when that guy handed it over to you?
Well, I by the time I was 16, I became a foreman with that little carnival, and I had 25 employees. So I learned about motivating people at a young age. And, you know, we didn't have much money to motivate them with. We were motivating them with extra cheeseburgers at the end of the night and stuff like that. So that was hard work. But, you know, Wayne, that industry instilled me with a great sense of urgency. In 10 years, I worked there, Bruce, off and on from age 10 to age 20. And, you know, we had 6 or 7 rides and about 20 games and a full-fledged concession trailer. But in that entire 10 years, we never missed a playing date ever. And we were only 4 hours late for an opening one time due to a tremendous thunderstorm. And you remember, the carnival industry is like packing up an entire business, putting it on trucks and moving it hundreds of miles overnight, setting it all up again. So you learn a lot about sense of urgency and the compounded errors from being late and the compounded advantages for being on time or early. So to this day, you know, another lesson, you know, carry the to-do list, another lesson, be on time, be early. And I just a drumbeat in me drives my poor wife crazy. If we're going to the mall at 6, I want to leave at 22. She's, "What's the hurry? It's just the mall." I know, but you know, I was trained.
Well, and some about your wife, kind of, that's where you met her, isn't it?
Oh, you are a funny guy. Yes, I was so fortunate. I needed a lady that would be able to run a huge concession trailer. So I put an ad in the paper, and she applied, and she came to work with us. And I'm sure glad she did. And we were nuts over each other in about 72 hours, and we've been together for 45 years. So yeah, that worked out. And that's the power of recruiting.
Oh, shoot. Well, let's, Dave, after the carnival years and learning those early lessons that you carried on, the habits, I would rather call them, maybe.
Yeah.
You got into another business. You got introduced into the direct sales business.
Yeah. You know, Wayne, to this day, I'll never forget September 17th, 1978. My dad convinced me to come and meet the local manager of a direct selling company. And I said, well, I'll meet him, but I'm not going door to door. And he said, oh, that's fine. Well, I met the guy and he was nice. He gave me cigarettes and coffee. So I hung around Bruce, and that in those days, free cigarettes was a big deal. And he was a great guy. And he introduced me to the idea of direct selling. And I got to say, Wayne, I got the bug. And you know, the first thing I learned is that you can get a J-O-B, a job, and be paid by the hour. But, Bruce, the governance on that will be that someone, either the owner of the business or the human resources officer, has decided what that job is worth per hour. And that's what you get. Or what it's worth as a salary, and that's what you get. Mm-hmm. And as a salesperson, and I urge all young people listening to this to understand this, and all coaches to understand it, as a salesperson, you are paid what you are worth. And you can train and train and train and develop and develop and develop. And I've had direct sellers that made $100 an hour on average on over a long extended period of time, some that made $150 an hour. And these were men and women that maybe, you know, just didn't feel like they fit somewhere else. They didn't want to work at the hospital for $15 an hour. They didn't want to work, on the roofing company for $20 an hour. They thought there was a better life. And by God, there is in the sales industry. But Wayne, you asked an important question. What do you do when salespeople are just down and distressed and not doing well? And the simple answer, and I thought back about that. You hold a meeting, you feed them, because salespeople got to have coffee and biscuits and donuts and fruit salad. And you talk about the product the company has. There is no reputable direct seller in North America, anywhere in the world today, that doesn't have a stellar product. And that product is going to serve a customer's needs better than anything sold at retail, better than anything sold online. That product's going to last a long time. That product's going to have a great warranty. That product's going to do things for consumers that other products simply cannot do. And that's the basis of our enthusiasm and our excitement and our leadership and our ability to sell. It's always the product, the product, the product, what the product does for us. And that'll fire up a salesperson quicker than anything, Wayne, because, you know, salespeople get down there. They're scared to hear, and they do hear the word no a whole lot. And hearing no is not fun. It's not fun. And so if they're down and distressed and not doing well, put together a presentation that surrounds the product, feed them, and get them going. You know, Wayne, a couple of years ago, I was fortunate enough to attend a meeting, and a guy encapsulated something that I think is important for all coaches and leaders to hear. He said, there's only three pillars for success that we as leaders got to recognize for salespeople. And of course, you and I and Bruce have been using these all our lives, but the pillars are, number one, recognition. Salespeople have to be recognized, Bruce. They have to hear, you know, something about them. You know, I was with one of my old bosses here a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't worked for him for over 20 years. And I had a pretty senior position in his company. But every time I'd walk in the room, he'd go, DB, that's a nice tie. Well, he knew that I liked ties, and that was his way to give me a little love, a little attention, to wake me up, make me feel good. So number one, salespeople have to have recognition. Catch them doing something right. The guy that wrote the book, The 1 Minute Manager, wrote that in one of his books. Was catch them doing something right and tell them about it. Number two, there has to be genuine advancement available. They've got to go from trainee to consultant, from consultant to junior consultant to senior consultant to group manager to team leader to distributor to great distributor to platinum distributor. There has to be advancement, and the advancement is based on their ability and their results. Your age, your sex, your height, your weight, your religion, your background, your education, none of that should matter. What matters is your ability, Wayne, to get the job done with the training and the resources you've been given. And that's what makes direct selling amazing. Back in the days, Wayne, when women weren't in leadership positions, I was fortunate enough to promote three women to divisional manager in my first company. And man, they did a great job and they outworked a lot of the guys. And they were, but that was advancement based upon ability. You know, their sex shouldn't matter. You know, I don't care if you're gay or straight or whatever. Let's just go on forward and help you to achieve. And then the last thing is leaders have to pay attention to money. Salespeople aren't working for nothing. They've got bills to pay. And they gave up a job, Bruce, where they had a salary, or they give up the opportunity to have a job with a salary, and now they're on commission. And woe unto the leader that doesn't worry night and day about his salespeople eating and doing well. And woe unto the leader that's not smart enough to step forward and you know, jump in and get them groceries or gas when it's needed. Because that's what it takes to create great people. Mm-hmm. You know, Wayne, I'm reminded of a story early on when we came into the last business that you and I worked in together, the Salad Master business. We had a young woman back in 2009, and we selected her. We wanted her to come into training. She was a young mother, and she had a four-year-old girl. And she came into training the first day, and we said, man, this gal has got it. Holy cow, we've got a star in our hands. Well, the next morning, very early, she called and she was very genuine. And she's, Mr. Bryant, I'm very sorry. I can't come for training today. I said, why not? She says, well, I have to pay my babysitter and there's gas and it's 50 miles to the office. And she said, I truly, truly can't afford it. And in a split second, I made the decision to give her $200 to get her to come to that training. Because I said, look, we're going to give you $200 as a special training bonus. We want you. We want you to feel good. We want you to develop. We think you're a somebody. And that allowed her to pay the babysitter and get a tank of gas. And that's exactly what she did. Well, Wayne, you know, I checked the records. That girl stayed about 5 or 6 years and sold over $2 million worth of product. Bruce, that's a lot of money.
That's a good investment.
It was, and it's easy to be a hard nose and say, I'm not going to do that. If she can't get here herself, well. But, and listen, for every one of those that paid off, I've done it 10 other times with someone that didn't. And that's, Wayne, that's what makes it tough.
But Dave, let me, you know, on that same stream, you had a guy that you believed in.
Yeah.
And you did those kinds of things for him. And he worked at another job and did part-time.
Yeah.
And but you saw the potential in this young man. And we always talked with him about his opportunity. And finally, I don't remember how many years ago he came full-time. Has it been 5? Has it been 4?
Something like that.
Yeah, it's been a good while. And he absolutely tripled his income the first year.
Yes, he sure did.
Probably more than tripled. And he's done a fantastic job. He worked, you know, for the city. So, you know, he had a stable job and all that kind of stuff. But everybody that comes in the direct sales business doesn't believe in them. They can't all, they, some of them just cannot grasp believing in yourself and the opportunity.
How do you guys cross the, I guess one of the things that I was kind of sort of in a direct sales thing and account executive for an advertising agency and get paid on the accounts I brought in.
Yeah.
Now, but at the time that, and that job wasn't paying benefits, right?
Right.
So does your direct sales thing have an insurance plan that some of the folks can get their health care addressed, or is just like, no, you're selling cookware and that's a wrap and you figure that stuff out on your own? How do y'all have like a mechanism, or did y'all have a mechanism for that, or just people just had to take care of their health care on their own?
Bruce, that's an excellent question. And what we find in America today is that most families are both people working. So yeah. If the husband's coming to work with us, we don't have benefits, health insurance, but the wife may, or the husband may be retired military. He's got VA benefits.
Right.
Or the wife is somebody. So 90% of the time, the benefits thing isn't a problem. But where it comes up, that person's got to be prepared. You know, we say, look, you know, it's going to be $600-$800 a month for your insurance, and you're going to have to get, you know, a sale or a half a sale to cover that. But if you have so many sales, you know, we'll cover it, and you just go forward. Okay. You know, I wrote a note too, and Wayne, reflecting on your comment and bringing it back to you, Bruce. Because I thought Bruce was going to say, how do you tell when someone's going to be good? And that's a good question. And the answer is, see people for what they believe, what you believe they can become, not right. for what they are at the moment. Because if we just saw little babies for what they were at the moment, nobody'd ever walk and nobody'd ever grow up. They're just little babies. We've got to see them walking and talking and you know, you never give up on them. One of my mentors is Jim Rohn, and he says, well, if you had to teach your baby to walk and he wasn't walking, exactly when would you give up on teaching the baby to walk? And the answer is, you don't. You keep going until that baby walks, and that's your job as a parent. Well, that's our job as coaches. Don't give up on people. At some point, if they can't make it, they'll quit before you'll let them go.
Right.
Yep.
You know, Wayne, I've got more notes, but do you have any other things that you wanted to ask me directly? Or
yes, I did.
Go ahead.
Again, I want to come back to people that aren't in direct sales business.
Yeah.
Most people, always, if you have an organization, you've got balls in the air. You've got everybody in the organization is not doing well. That's why it's good to build an organization. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. That's why it's good. They tell you in sales, you build wide so that somebody's not doing, you know, you can have a bad day, you can have a bad week, but you can't have a bad month if you're doing all the right things. And when you've got these people that are having that bad month, and I know you said you pray, you know, you have the recognition, you've got those other two, but you sometimes I trained a group of guys in Canada. Do you know where Canada is, Dave?
Sure do.
I can hear it in his voice.
Yeah, Dave's from Saskatchewan. He's from that part of the country where you could watch your dog run away for 3 days.
He just keeps going.
But I trained some guys in Canada when it first got rolling up there.
Yeah.
In Alberta, in Red Deer, Alberta. And they were some sales guys from Pitney Bowes and other direct sales. But I trained them up. So their first travel club was to Las Vegas. And I was there. And the dealer's name, I can say his name was Brad. And I was sitting at a blackjack table filled with these other dealers. I was sitting there playing with them. We were, how many chairs? There's five or six at a blackjack table. And it was all of us, you know. So Brad walked up and he laid $100 on every, except mine. You know, he laid $100 on each of his guys where their cards come on a bet. And of course, the boss man said money played. And then the pit boss looked over and nodded so they could play it. And the dealer busted. So he had to pay everybody. Well, Brad let the guys keep the 100 that he put down plus their winning. And that impressed the snot out of me. And I asked him later, I said, Brad, it didn't impress me. It blew me away. And I couldn't understand it. But so I asked Brad, I said, Brad, why in the world did you do that? And he said, Wayne, he said, sometimes you have to make your people win.
Wow, that's a great philosophy, isn't it? He's 100% right.
Well, but Dave, that reminds me of how I've seen you in your career with people in your organization. You make them win. Hmm. When they're down, when they're not batting 100%, you grab them by the hand and you take them out, whatever the prospecting method is.
You say, let's book some shows.
Yes. Yeah. And you take them. You don't send them out the door.
You're with them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Leaders, you know this, Wayne. I know this. It's leaders have got to lead. We got to take them by the hand and say, come on, let's do it. You say, let's do it. Let's take that hill. Let's attack. Let's win. Instead of you go do it, you'll win their hearts. You'll win their souls. Their bodies will follow. They'll stay with you as long as they can because they know they're loved and they're cared for. But if you just tell them to go do it, it's a pretty tough old deal. It's not going to happen for very long. Right. Yeah. No question.
I'm not as smart as you. When I was a young dealer, we made Master Dealer our first year.
Yeah.
And my first person in my business was Fred, and he started part-time. And he went full-time, and he was very successful. We sold a lot of cookware together. We prospected a lot together. And about 3 years in, Fred took a dive. And he had three kids and, car payments and house payment. And he was down. And I said, here's what I said. Fred, you're the best person I know. I mean, you know how to prospect. You know all about this. Just go out and book some shows. Well, about 4 months later, he was gone. Mm. So I learned that lesson that I talk about from experience.
The hard way.
What Fred needed was for me to say, come on with me.
Right.
Yeah.
And he needed me to put money in his pocket.
Right. Right.
That's making him successful. And Dave, I think when I'm talking about a guy I know named Dave Bryant, and you have been all the top levels with Salad Master, all the top awards. And yet, if you were in Tampa today, you'd be in the field with somebody.
Yeah. You really owe it to people. Leadership, what is it? The economic event occurs when a leader takes a junior person by the hand, goes to the field, and makes a sale. That's the economic event in the direct selling industry. When a leader says, I'm too good, I'm too big, my chair fits just right, my desk is good, he or she's going to fail. And you're right. You know, we used to have a lot of fun with that years ago. Wayne worked in another company, and those folks were managers that were on a salary, worked for the home office. And they'd get to where they didn't want to leave that comfortable office. And more than one time, I sent in a furniture company to repossess the desk, the chair, the side chairs, everything in the manager's office, and put it in storage for 2 or 3 weeks. And they wouldn't get it back, Bruce, until they got some sales.
Because
I mean, you just got to get people off their duff and out doing it. You can't be the leader and talk about how great it is if you're absolutely unwilling to do it. Yeah.
In the early Salad Master years with the original owner, with the founder of Salad Master, he finally hired a national sales manager, one of his top people that came with him and had worked in the field. His name was Gene. And Gene came into the home office. He said, well, Harry, where's my desk? This guy's new national sales manager. Harry, where's my desk? And Harry turned and said, oh, you don't need a desk. You're not going to be in here. We don't make any money in here. We make money in the field. So,
and I love him.
Yeah, that was how Harry handled that. Wait a minute. You don't need a desk. You're not going to be sitting down. You're going to be up there working.
Government position. My boss's boss said, well, this is a working management position. Here's your assistant. And she points to the printer. That's Mr. Hewlett Packard. And your, all right. And your other assistant is Miss Dell. And it was a Dell laptop that was issued from the government. And it sounds funny. Mr. Packard, Miss Dell will be your
assistants.
That's your staff.
Get to work.
Yep.
Well, Wayne, what else do you want to know? We're here to help people.
Let me ask you, when you've had, this could go to both of you, when you, like that one guy, he was good, and then the kids came, he was starting to falter, and then he left 3 months later. And I'm sure you've had other people in direct sales that left. Is there a common denominator of things besides not selling, but maybe psychological things that those people were experiencing that caused them not to sell that led to their eventual exiting the company?
Dave, kind of goes to the question I was trying to ask earlier about the guy that left. And you had so much hope in him. You had so much confidence.
Right. And he lost his mojo, right? I mean, okay. So look, and I get it. Somebody's wife dies or something like that, for God's sakes, you know, I'll take trauma off the table. But other than that, is there garden variety things like a risk equation that these folks in direct sales that you can kind of see coming? Like you said, you recognize talent, you foster talent, you set up stuff, you hold them by the hand, your management by example, yay. But then are there other things that you can do proactively, like, oh, crap, this guy's on the downhill slide?
Yeah, that's a good one. And I made a lot of notes for today's meeting, but I think that falls to one of these notes.
Okay.
Wayne, everyone has to have a reason for their existence and a really serious goal in order to do this. So, and as soon as they lose that, it falls apart. You know, years ago, I saw one of my former bosses walk in a meeting, and I thought he was very brusque and very irritating and probably upset my salespeople. But he said something profound. He asked all these guys in the room, he said, what's your goal for the month? Bruce, one guy says $4,000. The next guy says $5,000 earned. And he says, okay, so you want to make $4,000. Why do you want to make $4,000? And the other guy says, well, that's where my bills are. And he says, so when you make the $4,000, you can pay all your bills. He said, yep. He said, and that's your goal. He said, yep. And he said, looked right at him. He said, well, you may as well turn in your stuff now. You're never going to make it. And I'm like, dear God, don't kill my sales force.
Right.
And he said, I'm very serious with you. He says, if all you need to do is make $4,000 and you make it every month, you won't last long here. Right. He said, you may as well get a job at Kmart or Walmart, because they'll pay you a salary and you can make $4,000 and be home at 5:00. He says, here's what propels us. We have to have a reason why that takes us way beyond the $4,000. So that goes to goal setting. If you can get that guy to sit down and say, I'm going to make the $4,000 and provide for my wife and my family, guy or gal, but I want to make an extra $1,200 because I'm saving for my kids' college. I'm saving to put my mom into a new house, and I need to buy a new car next year. And though I've got these three little goals, mom and the house and the car, so I need an extra $1,200. Plus, I got to pay some taxes. So now I got to make $6,000. So Bruce, when you talk about that guy, he's now got to make a plan around $6,000. He's got to have an action plan to support 6,000, and he's got to be held accountable for 6,000. He will be happier, work harder, be more productive, and not be likely to quit. But when you are only working to pay the bills as a commissioned salesperson, I don't care if it's real estate or life insurance or anything you're selling, you're going to fail. You can't work to pay the bills. You got to be working to win the trip. You got to be working to buy your mom a new house. You got to be working to put kids through college. You got to have goals. And I guess that knocks that one off the list, but that's the fact.
You know what? And look, you're absolutely right. That holds true not with direct sales, but just anybody who has their own business, a small business owner, entrepreneur. I'm looking at myself as a small business owner, while I did fairly well in the government, I didn't have this college fund. I didn't do that. And so I literally, just like you said, set that goal. I had to pay for the kids' tuition, the apartment, stuff like that, you know, expenses and books and those stuff. And guess what? The money came. I mean, I earned it, right? I executed. Don't get me wrong. I'm responsible for making it. but you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But having that and knowing that was nipping at my heels. The apartment was due here. The tuition was due there. You know what I mean? I was rotating. And I knew, I was like, man, you know, let me get through that. And so then there's the other thing of a personal record. A lot of weightlifters will say, a lot of people that are working out and they have a personal trainer, they say my PR, you know, your CrossFit people. My personal record was I bench pressed whatever hundreds of pounds, you know what I mean? So maybe, right? You have folks in your direct sales that have a personal record, right? Or
yeah,
and then strive not so much to buy grandmama a house and a G-Wagon and or whatever, but just to say, hey, I want to see. Yeah, a trip. Those trips are good too, and I'm glad you mentioned that because yeah, those people or not those people, but folks are incentivized by that. But also, you might have some people that are just like, look, I'm not looking to be a diamond distributor or whatever, platinum level. I'm just looking to have my own to keep
personal record
and have that elevate every 6 months.
Yeah,
I mean, that's by default. Maybe after a year or 2 years or 3 years of performing at these records. By default, I become a master dealer. I'm sorry, I don't know the lingo, but you know what I mean. I become
sure
these things. So I don't know.
Well, I think your personal record thing falls back to the three pillars of success. If you don't have a huge number compared to everybody else, but it is your record and you set it, we have to be smart enough as leaders to recognize it and ask you to go after it again. And ask you to beat it again, and maybe you can match it. But the other thing we got to do is what Wayne is famous for, and that is get you to couple up with someone else. And that falls into advancement. When you can teach a salesperson to be a recruiter or a trainer, he or she is going to accomplish a lot of things. And here's what they'll accomplish. Bruce, right. If I'm out there every day just selling for myself, even if I'm setting personal records, boredom will set in. But if I've got my friend Bruce and I've got my other gal, Susie, and I'm trying to help Bruce and I'm trying to help Susie and I'm trying to bring them along with me and group them up with me and help them, I take my mind off my troubles. I pour my heart into them, and now I become a bigger, better, more well-rounded person. That pain I had in my back disappears. That migraine headache, even though it's still there, it's not quite as strong. Okay? And most importantly, and Wayne will love this, it gets us out of our egocentric space because salespeople, when they become good, become little egomaniacs pretty quick. And that's the Italians always say, that's the kiss of death. And it really is. Once you become egocentric, it's all over. Wayne, I remember, and I don't know where I was blessed with this, but I was blessed. I won a huge trophy back in, way back 40 years ago. And I won 8 trophies that month. The president had me on stage and he presented all these trophies. And I was, all about me in my head. And then he asked me to say something and it flashed through my brain. And some early lesson in life, probably my grandmother got to me. And it was, they don't want to hear anything about you. They want to hear about them. So he gave me 8 trophies, Wayne. Well, you know, you get 8 at once. He said, just stand here. You're top in the division, top in the country, top in the region, top in the branch. Blah, you're top for this. You're top. You got 8. You got every. You cleaned house. You got everything. And it, I was a real young guy. And it flashed through my head. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you, as I look around the audience, all I see is champions everywhere. There's not one of you that can't beat me. And here's how you can do it.
Right.
And as soon as I let go of me and tried to genuinely help them, I became a better person. They sure liked me a lot more because nobody really loves that guy with 8 trophies.
Right.
They'll applaud you, but they don't love you. But they love you a lot more when you're giving it back and empowering them. Right. And I've tried to keep that lesson central. And you know, it's sometimes you fail, but as a salesperson, if as a leader, if you want that salesperson to be ultra successful, teach them to recruit others, teach them to train others, and put them in charge of others and give them responsibility. Because just doing the same old thing, prospecting for a customer, seeing a customer, presenting a product, writing an order every day, when you're really good, can get really boring.
Yeah.
And then you lose a really good guy. But if you can give him or her other responsibilities, then you've got him.
Dave, I got to bring up one thing before we get finished. We still haven't done it, and it's been on my agenda since the beginning, since before the call. And again, it's an example that happened in your organization. The importance of a spouse and the person in the organization having the same why and appreciating the business, because, you know, we've talked and the guy left that had every reason not to. I mean, it just, he really had the world in a jug and a stopper in his hand, but the spouse didn't quite see that ever, even though he more than tripled their income and they bought a house where every kid had a bedroom. They had more than they ever had or could have, and that wasn't enough for some people because they didn't have that deep-seated belief, I think.
Well,
and what? Well, you know, we're going to lose people like that.
Yes,
isn't that greed? If it's not, is that what you're saying? The person said, "Well, that wasn't enough." Or,
you know, well, it wasn't a greedy thing. Well, it was greed on some level, but Dave, you talked about it.
Well, no, what we're talking about in this case, Bruce, was a wonderful lady who just felt she wanted to see more of her husband in the evenings and the weekends. And those are the times that we do a lot of work. So that doesn't make her wrong.
Sure.
That makes her wanting what she wanted and needing what she needed. And look, it's not for everybody. Everybody can't do it. But back to your point, Wayne, we as leaders in every company have to be very conscious of the lady behind the man behind the lady. Years ago, one of my former bosses had a cruise for everybody, and we had 150 couples on the cruise, and my wife couldn't come. And just before we left, she got a box in the mail, and it was from Tiffany's Jewelers, and it had a big, beautiful, stylized silver boat anchor on it with a personal note from him said, you know, dear Flo, we're going to miss you on the cruise. You're important to us. Please enjoy this with my compliments. Well, she still has that, and she still talks about it, and that's 25 years ago. So we as leaders owe it to intersect with that spouse and do the right things. But you know, Bruce, we can't win them all. We're going to lose people. Every company has turnover. Every army has retirees. You know, even Wayne retired, although he keeps coming back. He's now back for the seventh time. But we just do. And I'll give you words of wisdom for leaders. I had a marvelous old guy I worked with in Georgia. And Wayne, for 30 years, he was a President's Club winner in our old company. His name was Ray. And Ray taught me a lesson. One day I went to his office and there was 30 people in there. And we'd just done a recruiting session. We had four or five more new recruits. And one guy came in and decided to quit. And Ray shook his hand and told him he loved him. And he'd, you know, see him down the road. And he was always welcome back. And I had a little moment of exasperation. I said, Ray, that guy shouldn't have quit on us. He said, well, look, Dave, he says, here's what I learned years ago. I've been doing this 30 years. He said, you have to take your heart and you got to split it down the middle. And on one side of your heart, you cover it with solid stainless steel. And the other side of your heart, you love that salesperson with all your heart. Because I'm here to tell you, sooner or later, they'll leave. It might be a year, might be a month, might be 20 years, and it can't hurt you. That's why you cover half your heart with stainless steel. But you got to give them all you've got to keep them. Because you as a leader owe it to everybody else to still maintain a positive mental attitude, still move forward, still tell everybody this is going to be our best week, our best month, our best year, and you are a good guy, and you are a good guy, and we need you, ladies, we need you, gentlemen. So you're going to lose people. You shouldn't, but inevitably you will. I lost two of my best friends. One, I was so mad when he quit, I didn't talk to him for years, but we're back to being friends again. And because, Bruce, I was a little young and immature. I mean, I put everything into that guy. When he quit, it was too much for me to take. This was going back 25 years. But, wow. But we're, you know, we're back talking again, and he could be on the show right now, and we'd laugh about that.
Hey, we'll bring him on.
But you can't win them all. Nobody stays forever, but you have to give them everything you've got. You got to love them. You got to care about them. And you got to be in touch with them. And you know, do your best with them. What else, Wayne? You've got so many good questions.
We are within less than 2 minutes, so we better. We're at the 2 minute warning here. So,
all right.
I guess, Dave, any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I got one. I think, and I learned this only a year ago from a gentleman who's was our senior VP, and that was the difference between efficiency. The word efficient and the word effective. You know, we're in an age where modern communication says that we should text everybody, and then we should text them and send them colorful emojis with it. And we should attach little videos and stuff. And that's very efficient. We're in an age for the last 25 years where we can send email to people and that email gets there really quickly. And that's very efficient. We're in an age where Facebook can act as a bulletin board and give us immediate Facebook lives and let people know what's going on. But is that communication effective? And the answer is, by and large, no. It's efficient because it can cover a lot of people, Bruce, in a short period of time. But for us to be coaches, for us to be leaders, for us to be men and women that take people to the next level, pick up the phone, call people, have a real honest to God conversation. And if you call and they don't answer, leave a good lengthy voicemail and tell them how important they are to you and what you're expecting of them and ask them to call you back. Call. The other thing is get in your car and drive over to their house and go see them, whether it's a customer or a consultant. Face to face, belly to belly, give them a hug, see them, bring them an apple pie, visit, see them, because efficiency isn't going to carry the day. In American business, we've got to be effective. That's it, Wayne. That's all
And Dave, how can people reach you? What's your best contact that people can reach you?
My email is dave@ncs. That's Nancy Charlie Sam FL.net. And should I put it in the chat box?
That's okay.
NCSFL.net.
And it'll be on the show summary. All right, Dave, thanks for coming on the show. Well, folks,
that's a wrap.
Come see us on our social media at concierge_coaches on Instagram, Facebook. We're at the Concierge Coaches Show. Also, feel free to see the podcast on Apple Podcast and then on iHeartMedia. So again, and I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Wayne, how can folks reach you?
Wayne_515@yahoo.com.
Amen. All right, y'all take care. Have a blessed week. We'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you guys. Thanks so much. Take care. Have a great day, everyone.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.